work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping, and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. But these days, it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made, and from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. It's crafted with timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, which means this hoodie can withstand any outing or adventure. It'll be your new favorite hoodie, and you can depend on it for years to come. Plus, buying from American Giant means supporting local communities of farmers, manufacturers, and more. This season, snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
Company name will be set.
Yesterday, and I had to rush to... didn't get anything free, but I may as well mention it. Joseph Banks, and they hooked me up. I wear a 42 short coat. They don't have a lot of those available. They were able to send up me in a hotel car, get a heavy coat, and leave less than $200 in 10 minutes. That's one of the true success stories in life that I've ever had. Anyway, I'm wearing it today, and I'm glad because it's 32 degrees if you average the temperatures in the area, and it's going to be a chilly day today. Highs of only 46, 49 tomorrow, 50 on Thursday with a 50% chance for showers, and warming on Friday, somewhat highs of 60, 90% chance for showers. That's in advance of another front that cools it out and clears it off out for the weekend. I should say cools it off, clears it out for the weekend. Highs Saturday of 48, 56 on Sunday. It's hard to believe. I know yesterday was 12th night. It's only Monday, but it seems like it's still New Year's, but it's already Tuesday, January 7th. And with that in mind, we thought we'd talk to Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst for Bankrate, about what we can expect from the Fed and rates for savings, mortgages, and more in 2025. And I want to open it up to the audience here at 504-260-1870. If y'all got any questions or comments about interest rates or financial, I guess, decisions you need to make, text them in and I'll pass them along. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. So tell me what Bankrate is. A lot of people hear about it, but they don't know.
Yeah, personal finance website. We help people make informed financial decisions. You can use our site to find the best returns for savings accounts or certificates of deposit, or find the lowest rate when you're shopping for a mortgage. We also have articles that we're publishing to the site constantly to keep you informed about what you need to know in the world of personal finance. And then we also have free calculators that you can use. So if you're trying to figure out how much you need to be saving to reach a particular financial goal or to save for retirement, you know, we've got calculators to help you figure that out.
A text pops up five times from the same number. I don't know if this is an urgent text or I don't know if they sent it five times, but considering there does seem to be a sense of urgency, I'm going to start with that. Greg, even though it might be a little bit off of the topic, and they want to know, basically it's a long text, but what they're saying is they think the market is overvalued. They have a choice of taking some of the 401k out and paying off the mortgage because they say that the money that they put into the house, as I understand it, because it's kind of disjumbled, you know what I'm saying, disjointed here and jumbled up, but that if once they put the money into the house and pay the house off, that's real. If the market is overvalued, they could lose it in the 401k, even though it's doing very well, and are concerned of a market downturn. Is that way out of your wheelhouse, or is that anything you'd care to talk about? Because they do seem worried about it.
Yeah, I'm glad the question came up. It's you know right in my wheelhouse. So there's really, I think, two things here to address. One is just this. The idea that maybe, because of, markets being pretty richly valued, that maybe your 401k is a little out of balance. In other words, stocks have done really, really well. bonds didn't. And so you had your intended investment mix a few years ago of, say, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. It's now 75% stocks, 25% bonds. You're right. You're really out of whack. And so the answer there is rebalancing. And in the course of rebalancing, what you're doing is selling high and buying low. Mm-hmm. You're selling off some of what's done well, putting that money into something that hasn't done as well in order to rebalance back to your intended investment mix. And that's something that all investors should look at periodically just to make sure that the allocation is really what is best suited for their goals and risk tolerance. Now, second part of that question is about the taking the money out of the 401k and paying off the mortgage. No, and here's why. A couple reasons. One is that there's a taxable event when you take money out of your 401k. You pull that money out, it's taxable to you as income. Secondly, depending upon the rate that you have on your mortgage, that could be very low-cost debt. If you're one of those people walking around with a 2.5%, 3%, 4% mortgage rate, that's low-cost debt. You want to keep that money working for you in the 401k on a tax-advantage basis, not paying off some low-cost debt. And then third, even if you pay off, let's say even if the mortgage rate is a little bit higher, you know, 5%, 6%, 7%, even if you do pay that off, the money, that equity is inaccessible. It's not like going to the ATM and being able to pull cash out when you need it. That money's tied up in your home, and you can't get to it if you need it. So if you have a major home repair or unplanned medical expense, you can't get to that. So, keeping it in the 401k and just, keeping your assets a little bit more on the liquid side gives you the flexibility to respond to, unplanned expenses or major home repairs, without having to resort to borrowing.
And, I'm scanning through the text, numerous texts, and y'all, if you text in, it's best to keep it short because otherwise it comes up in different pieces mixed in with other people's texts based on the timing of it. But a lot of that depends on how old they are, because they'd also be paying a penalty on that money they take out of the 401k if they're below a certain age. Below a certain age.
Yeah, exactly. Under age 59 and a half, you're going to pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty. Yes.
So all in all, let's phrase it a different way. Do you see it's not about market downturn. It's about what your balance and what you're invested in, correct?
Well, yes, because volatility is normal, right? I mean, you were saying it's 32 degrees today. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be 32 degrees every day. It's cold front. Yeah, it's going to get a little bit colder for a few days, and then it'll warm up again. And so markets kind of go through that too, where we've been on quite a run. Some level of pullback is inevitable. And you just kind of ride that out, bundle up that big winter coat you got yourself the other day, and ride that out for a few days. And then, markets rebound, but you got to be in it to win it. There's a very famous investor named Peter Lynch who famously said, more money has been lost by people trying to avoid market corrections than has actually been lost in market corrections. And, in other words, you can be your own worst enemy and do more harm than good by, figuring you're going to outsmart the market. Oh, I'll get out now and then I'll get back in later. Oh, good luck, because you got to make not just one, but two great decisions there. You got to know when to get out, and then you got to know when to get back in. I haven't met anybody yet who can pull both of those off.
And that's also, just for people that are listening, and it might be in a similar position, I don't want to spend the whole segment on this, but that depends on when they plan on retiring and everything else. There's a lot of information that was not in that text, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing is, even once you retire, you may be looking at 25 or 30 years or more in retirement. So you can't afford to be invested too conservatively when you retire, because that money has to still last you a long time, multiple decades. You don't need all that money the day you retire. So yes, you want conservative investments for the, say, first 5 years of withdrawals, but you're still going to need a pretty healthy allocation to stocks even once you retire, so that you can earn inflation-beating returns, preserve the buying power of your money as you age and in those later years.
Greg, my retirement strategy is to start mixing in a little bit of dog food every day into my normal food now, and then increasing it so that by the time I retire, I'll be used to eating nothing but dog food. What do you think?
Well, let me know how that works. I'll help you on the savings and the investing stuff. You can tell me how that works.
That was a more conservative approach that I was using, because I always like to cover my bases. We'll be back talking about interest rates and more with Greg McBride, who is the chief financial analyst for Bankrate, and Tolerating This Idiot politely this morning. 622 traffic now. Tommy Tucker, WWL 627. Quickly back to our guest to talk about the Greg McBride, I guess I should tell you, chief financial analyst for Bankrate. Talk about what we can expect as far as interest rates and so far forth financially in 2025. Go ahead. The floor is yours, sir.
Well, I do expect that we will see interest rates come down a little bit more, but it's going to be at a modest pace. And what that means is if you have credit card debt, if you have a home equity line of credit, rates aren't going to come down far enough or fast enough to solve your problems. You still have to stay aggressive about debt repayment. Grab those 0% and other low rate balance transfer offers to turbocharge your debt repayment on the credit card. And on that home equity line of credit, have a game plan for paying it back because of the fact that rates are only going to come down at a very modest pace. I only expect the Fed to cut interest rates 3 times this year. Mm-hmm. And so that means that, you know, your rate that's your credit card rate that's above 20% now, it'll get a little bit below 20% by the end of the year, but it's still going to be very high cost debt. So rates aren't going to fall fast enough to solve your problems. On the mortgage front, if you're in the market for a mortgage, I expect it's going to be a volatile year. Mortgage rates right now are around 7%. I expect we're going to see volatility both up and down. We'll see rates moving higher than where they are now. We'll also see rates moving down well into the sixes. I've got them ending the year around 6.5%. So a little bit better, but if you're holding out for those 3%, 4%, 5% mortgage rates of yesteryear, 2025 is not going to deliver.
Let's talk about the other side of it, the savings side of it, rather than the borrowing side.
Yeah, it's a little counterintuitive to say, well, it's going to be a good year for savers when we're talking about rates coming down. But that's exactly what it's going to be if you have your money in the right place. Most banks are still paying really low rates on savings and CDs, in many cases below 1%. That's not where you want to have your money. The top yielding online savings accounts, money markets, and CDs are still offering yields well above 4%. That's where you want to have your money. And yes, those rates will come down as the year progresses, but you're still going to be earning above the rate of inflation. And that's your measuring stick. That's the bogey for savers. So even in a year when rates come down, we expect that if you've got your money in the right place, those most competitive offers, you'll continue to out-earn inflation.
Greg, one point I'd like you to talk about quickly with is HELOCs. And if you have a 2% mortgage, the worst thing in the world you want to do is refinance at 6 when you might be able to get a HELOC at 6 and hang on to your original mortgage, right?
Yes, exactly. Don't touch that low rate first mortgage. Take out the home equity line of credit. That's why we're seeing a booming business in home equity lines now. But keep in mind that home equity line rates are higher now. It's no longer that low cost source of borrowing that we got accustomed to for the better part of 20 years. Some of those have rates in the double digits. So be sure to shop around, make sure your credit's in good shape, and have a game plan for paying it back.
And real quick, 15 seconds, auto loans. What kind of rates are we looking at?
On average, rates are still well into the sevens. I expect that'll move lower by the end of the year, around 7%. But shop around. That's average. Never settle for average. If you've got good credit, you can get rates better than that. Include credit unions in your search.
Jordan's going to come strangle me. But real quick, the longest time rate to finance a vehicle, best practices, do you have a thought on that?
I'm not a fan of going beyond 5 years. Right. I think when you start going beyond 5 years, that's a red flag that, you know, maybe you're buying too much vehicle for your monthly budget.
Right there with you. You can just start repairing it while you're still paying for it. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it as always. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst for Bankrate. We'll talk to Dane Cialino when we come back about lawsuits as it relates to the terror attack. Right now, 30 seconds late. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Chilly, chilly Tuesday morning. A beautiful blanket of blue-gray clouds behind the Crescent City Connection, still lit up in purple, gold, and green for January 6th, King's Day yesterday, I guess, a late Mardi Gras this year, March 4th, so you can eat a whole bunch of king cake. Dane Cialino joins us now, president of Law at Loyola, of Law at Loyola, our friend, to talk about the terror attack on Bourbon Streets and lawsuits that have been announced. Good morning, Dane. Happy New Year to you.
Morning, Tommy. Happy New Year to you.
Is there a legal or a constitutional constraint on when you can say Happy New Year? Do you know?
I think there's a Seinfeld episode on that, and I think we're past that deadline.
Are we past
Tommy.
It? Okay. Well,
we are.
I go with it until the end of January if I talk to somebody for the first time. Let's talk about serious up here and talk about the attacks on Bourbon Street. I think we all knew it was just a matter of time until some kind of suit was filed. Dane, I don't know. I'm just going to back off and let you explain about suing public agencies suing cities, public entities, negligence, what the challenges are going to be here. Sir, Professor, the floor is yours.
Well, the answer here is pretty simple. You cannot sue a peace officer or a governmental entity that employs a peace officer for damages in a civil suit where the allegation is that the police officer or the city performed some sort of discretionary function in law enforcement in a negligent manner. And that's exactly what these lawsuits, there's already one filed, and if others are filed, are alleging that the city, probably including all the way up to the mayor's office and the superintendent of police, were negligent in not exercising reasonable care to protect people from a terrorist attack on Bourbon Street.
Is that qualified immunity, Dane? Is that the same thing or not?
It is a form of qualified immunity. You know, oddly enough, this principle arose in case law all over the country, including in Louisiana. And the Louisiana legislature just last regular session codified that immunity principle into the Louisiana revised statutes. So this is a brand new statutory law that couldn't be clearer that simply there is no lawsuit.
So why file it? I'm not trying to put you into the mind of the people that did. I can understand from a family standpoint, but from the legal firm standpoint, although as part of being a lawyer, you do try to put yourself in the mind of other people, I guess, right?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, it could be that the lawyers just didn't do their pre-suit investigation into the law that would foreclose this sort of lawsuit. Maybe they are hoping for some change in the law at some point. I don't know, because to me, the law really in this area couldn't be clearer, even though I think even citizen observers like you and I who aren't experts in law enforcement know that there was negligence here, that that the city knew or certainly should have known about this this significant risk. They had taken efforts to ameliorate the risk, but then just let those efforts essentially waste away on the street, and the bollards were not working. They were, I mean, we could go on, but we all know that there was negligence here, but there's nothing that can be done about it, at least in a civil lawsuit.
Is there a long game being played here about ultimately trying to get to the qualified immunity itself, either through an appeals court or the Supreme Court, where, because I would believe this happened in other jurisdictions before, other municipalities. I would, maybe it happened after 9/11 where other attacks have happened, or George Floyd, anything in these situations. But how is that different? For example, let me take the George Floyd incident. Did the city pay out judgments in those cases? And when law enforcement officers have been wrong, judgments have been paid out, right? But that's different than negligence. Take me through that, Dane, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are civil rights statutes, the federal civil rights statutes that allow you to sue when a police officer acting under color of state law deprives you of your civil liberties. And we often see those lawsuits in excessive force situations like George Floyd. Those are routinely brought. Typically, the city, the municipality, is shielded from any liability by a form of immunity, because unless the municipality ordered the conduct at, you know, up at the highest levels, or there's a pattern of practice that the municipality is ignoring and failing to address. But, you know, those cases are intentional wrongdoing by police officers. And this Louisiana statute excludes from the scope of the immunity any intentional conduct. So if a police officer were to beat you or to use excessive force, there's still the ability to bring a lawsuit against that officer. Less likely to bring a lawsuit against the municipality that employs the officer. But in this case, we're talking about simple negligence, and simple negligence, even though it had catastrophic consequences in this case, is not something that you can bring a civil rights suit to redress those damages.
It seems like one, we're talking active actions, the other a lack of actions almost, but lack of actions would be covered by qualified immunity. Accurate?
Correct. This qualified immunity from a negligence lawsuit for exercising a discretionary function. And you can see the policy for that. I mean, if the fire truck got to your house a little late and it burned down because the firefighters took a wrong turn or didn't use the right hoses to pump the right amount of water on your house, I mean, the liability would be endless if we allowed municipalities to be liable for that sort of discretionary function negligence.
All right, 6:51. Let me take a break for traffic. We'll come back with Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, our good friend. If you have any questions about these lawsuits or first lawsuit, I got to believe there would be more that have been filed in this Bourbon Street attacks. You can text them into the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. Traffic now, WWL. 6:57, 3 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola. Dane, you know, I had 3 hours of media law at UNO and 3 hours of business law at UNO, so you consider me a peer, don't you?
Of course.
Some texts are coming in. Can other lawsuits besides civil be filed? In other words, is there any possible legal recourse? That's from the talk and text line.
Not that I can think of. I mean, I guess there could be some administrative actions brought against police officers for incompetence or dereliction of duty or something along those lines. I'm not suggesting that anybody in particular was responsible. I don't know, but that's about the only thing that I can think of. I can't imagine any criminal actions would be warranted. Civil actions aren't appropriate because of the qualified immunity. That would only leave administrative actions, and I would be surprised to see anything like that.
Somebody else texted and said, please ask the professor about the people who rented the truck and a guy who sold the terrorist the gun. Now, to me, Dane, in my massive legal experience, the only person who would be liable for this is the terrorist. There's no money there because he was broke, which led to his problems. They talk about suing up the chain, right? But talk about, I don't know how the people who rented the truck would have any foreseeable no action, knowledge that this would happen, or the gun, et cetera. Go through that whole thing, please.
Yeah, exactly. Their only liability or criminal responsibility would flow from knowing or about the terrorist activity that was planned and then aiding and abetting it, or whether they should have known about it. I can't imagine any of those, the supplier of the truck or any of the raw materials used to make the bombs or the sellers of the firearms had any knowledge or constructive or actual knowledge that this was going to happen. So in the absence of proof that they knew or should have known that they were aiding and abetting a terrorist act, I can't imagine that they're going to face any liability.
So to wrap it up in 30 seconds, and I'm getting text here, political responsibility and civil liability are two different things completely, and that's where qualified immunity comes in. Accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. And if citizens don't like what happened, and obviously none of us do, then there's not going to be any civil recourse. It's going to be at the ballot box.
Thank you, Dane. A pleasure as always. Have a good January. Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola. We'll talk to council member Joe Geruso when we come back. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us. Chilly Tuesday morning, WWL.